The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Olympic Games. That's right. It's fun to say. I enjoy it, and we're going to break it all down. Joining me to do just that, Sia Nejad is here. Sia, what's up?
Rick, I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you specifically and the First Cut Pod on the Cam Champ outright. We didn't really talk about it yesterday on the First Look. Congratulations to the entire First Cut Pod team and Rick Gaiman. I know you had it going so many different ways. So I just had to get that out there before we get into this one.
Hey, I completely understand. And thank you. Greg Ducharme is here. And Greg, you and I spent much of Sunday night trying to describe to Mark how we got onto Cam Champ on Monday. And hey, sometimes things work out.
Look, it was worth a shot. I mean, in hindsight, it wasn't like, okay, Cam Champ's going to win this week. It was like, hey, this is worth the chance. Right. But Sia, just to, since we're, you know, giving everybody congratulations, nice shirt, by the way. Great color choice. It looks great on you. But the other thing is that I wanted to mention, Louis Oosthuizen. You were very clearly right, and I was very clearly wrong, and so proud of Louis, and proud of you for being all over that. So, mad props, bro. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was happy about that. Happy about our Michael Gellerman call as a show as well. I mean, we had some nice hits last week, so hopefully we have some this week as well.
This is quite the warm and fuzzy moment we're having here.
I'm just patting everybody on the back here.
C's got tennis elbow already from patting everybody on the back. Gentlemen, the Olympic Games. We've got to talk about it. Very interesting situation. We did, obviously, the first look on Sunday, but now we turn our attention to the full DFS pricing. We can kind of talk about the course a little bit more, and the competitors are arriving in Tokyo, and they are donning their team colors. So, Greg, let's start with the course. Kasumi Gaseki Country Club, I believe is how it is pronounced. It was redesigned and modernized 5 years ago. It's a Fazio design. They added 500 yards. They combined the two greens into one. And I am under the assumption that approach play and being able to hit the ball the right number is going to be well rewarded this week.
Yes, it absolutely will be. Now, the question is, and the thing we got to figure out, is what is going to allow you to hit the ball the right number? Because I found out, gotten kind of through the, remember on the first look, we had that little translation issue where we were dealing with firmness and softness, right? And it makes sense now. So when during this season in Japan, it's a little bit hot and a little bit rainy, and that's going to lead to soft conditions. So this will not be firm and fast. It'll be soft. It'll be receptive. And that makes the golf course play longer, but it makes getting the distance right a little bit easier. You think back to the President's Cup where it was really firm and fast. I know that was a long time ago, December of 2019. But when it was firm and fast, the great ball strikers were able to get the distance right. When it gets softer, traditionally, guys that aren't necessarily elite in their ball striking can also perform very well tee to green. So that'll be interesting to see. I still favor approach. I still think great iron players are going to do great. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I'm looking at so far this week.
Yeah, there's also a forecast that looks as if potential rain every single day of the week, and you imagine that's going to soften things up a little bit. See, 59 competitors as of this moment, and no cut. 72 holes of no cut stroke play action. Does that change the way you are going to approach some of your picks, some of the guys in your lineup, knowing that there is no risk of missing the cut and going home on Friday?
Absolutely. I mean, it really lends itself to a stars and scrubs approach, because you know that if you're, let's say, 6K guys, and I make that plural for a reason, if they have a bad Thursday or Friday, it's not that it doesn't matter. You want them to be good, but they're going to be playing the next 2 days regardless, unless, of course, there's a withdrawal, which obviously can happen in this day and age. But with that said, I really think if you can look for guys in, let's say, the 6K or low 7K range that you wouldn't ordinarily play because the miscut equity is just too high, but guys that can maybe really go low. You know, I've looked at some guys, and we'll talk about them later in the show, that have been missing cuts here and there and making cuts, but the miscuts, you might see like a 64 and like a 75. So the ability to go low, you know, okay, a bad day is fine if you can really be a scorer the next day. So I'm definitely looking for a stars and scrubs approach. I don't think a balanced lineup is necessarily a bad idea if you really like the guys. Like, there's plenty of guys in the 7 and 8K range that might really do well here, but you absolutely can go stars and scrubs. So I'll be doing that a little bit more than I would normally on a standard cut event.
All right, well, let's just jump right into the stars. I'll pull up the cheat sheet here. This is my website. It's rickrungood.com. I love it. I think you will too. And there are six golfers over $10,000 here, Greg. And luckily, you know, the news of the John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau WD took place before the pricing came out. So we don't have a pricing void or kind of like it would have created these natural gaps and ownership would have been all wacky and it would have caused this whole big thing, but we don't have that, which is good. And it's Colin Morikawa who is the most expensive golfer. He's $11,200. Justin Thomas at 10.9, Xander at 10.7. Then the bottom of the $10,000 range is Hideki Matsuyama in his home country, Rory McIlroy, and then Bryson DeChambeau's replacement, Patrick Reed, is 10,100. What do you see when you look at the top six golfers on the board?
A lot of guys I want in my lineup. That's what I see. I mean, this is why Sia's stars and scrubs approach works so well, because Colin Morikawa, I mean, think about the things we've discussed. Great iron play, guys that are going to make a lot of birdies, I think are going to do well. So you look at a Colin Morikawa, a Justin Thomas, a Xander Schauffele even. Those guys are great iron players. Those are the guys you want on your team. And you look at Rory McIlroy. He hits the ball so high. Most of his victories come on really soft. They come in soft conditions. And his apex is going to go a long way. So I expect Rory to have a distance advantage because he carries it so far. You're not going to get a lot of roll in the fairways. So carry distance will be really important. And he stands out in that group. So I see basically, and then Hideki Matsuyama, just to briefly talk about him, think about the Masters that he won, what he did on that Saturday afternoon after a rain delay, when the golf course softened up a little bit, he just went attacking hole locations. He went attacking flags. So he's very good in that mindset. So I'm not huge on Patrick Reed this week. But when I look at everybody up until Reed, I don't think you can go wrong. You could convince me on any. My personal favorite is Justin Thomas, and the one thing on Hideki is, what's the pressure going to do? Is it going to, and as to go with Paul Azinger, right? Is it going to build a diamond? Is it going to build a diamond or burst the pipe? You've heard that line doesn't come from me, but what's going to happen with Hideki on that front? So I think Thomas is my favorite player in this range. Rory has my interest as well.
It's funny you mentioned Justin Thomas, and there are actually other guys in this field who we'll talk about the pressure implications. The two South Korean players, Hideki Matsuyama, certainly playing kind of different games this week. But I think it's interesting you got to Justin Thomas here, and I think I kind of did to Sia. So it is very early. We don't know how this ownership is going to play itself out. I love Colin Morikawa at the top. I assume everybody does. I assume everybody loves Xander Schauffele, 10,700. And it leaves Justin Thomas in this really kind of sandwich pricing. And if you talk about a golf course that should reward approach players, a small field, no cut event in which Justin Thomas's 14 PGA Tour victories are small field, no cut events. Is he your leverage play in the $10,000?
He's certainly a leverage play, and he would be the leverage play in the $10,000, this elite range, but I still kind of don't love it. And the only reason is, and I understand where you're going with Justin Thomas, but the game really hasn't all been there. And I know it's one of those things where, well, Justin Thomas can find his game at any moment, but the putting hasn't been very good. The approach play has been okay. He's not finding a ton of fairways. So when I look at him versus, and I get it, he's contrarian versus probably like a Colin or a Xander. So I understand why you'd want to play him, but I love Colin so much in this tournament. So it's really hard. And I like Xander a lot too, for so many different reasons. But I mean, no matter how you look at Colin Morikawa, whatever angle, whatever narrative you want to play, narrative gained Olympics. I've built that model out. We'll talk about it on the show. But the point is Colin ranks out like number one everywhere. I mean, whether you're looking at, strokes gained approach, again, let's say last 24 rounds, one. Ball striking, one. Maybe you want to go to birdie or better gained, number one. Strokes gained par four. Guess what? It's number one. So I'm cherry picking some stats here, but they're all like the really important stats, right? So I don't know how you kind of get away from Colin. And obviously, it's his first Olympics, but that's not going to be a problem, Colin Morikawa. So I can't really get away from Colin, which is why I don't think I can get to JT, because I would have him third in line behind Colin and Xander.
He by the way, so it's pretty much everybody's first Olympics. And one other thing real quick.
Yeah, Greg, good point.
Right. Real quick on Morikawa as well. We mentioned the soft conditions. A lot of reports I've heard have said the greens will be a little bit on the slow side, and slow greens will benefit. I think they benefit guys that aren't necessarily the greatest putters, and Colin Morikawa fits that mold. Justin Thomas does too. So I really like that. But Xander, I don't like the greens for Xander because of, even though he's just so steady, again, like I said, you can't go wrong with him. But the arm lock, the regular putting, where is he going to be with the putting? That's the one question I have for Xander speed-wise.
Yeah, I am. Morikawa, if you like the approach metric, he laps the field. He just laps it. I mean, the gap between him and the next closest guy is insane. So I'm happy to live in the upper $10,000 range. If I have to take a stand on somebody and avoid Xander, so be it. If I have to avoid Hideki, so be it. It brings us to the bottom of the range here, Sia. I think, Rory is always interesting because no matter how well he plays, we seemingly think he's not playing well. You know what I mean? He was in contention at Torrey Pines late on Sunday, and we're like, he hasn't played well in a while. Like, no, that's not true. And then Patrick Reed, the thing with Reed, he gets to don the stars and stripes, Sia, but he is going to show up in Tokyo like Wednesday afternoon, and he's basically going to go blind into this golf course on Thursday morning.
Yeah, it's a lot of travel. It's just a lot that's going to be on Patrick Reed. And given that his game isn't super pristine compared to the guys around him, I like him strictly as a contrarian play, but I really truly don't expect him to do nearly as well as the other guys we mentioned in this range.
Okay, let's hop on down to the $9,000 range here. It's small. There's only 8 or 9 golfers in this field. Victor Hovland, Shane Lowry, Paul Casey, Abraham Ancer, Joaquin Niemann, and Sung Jae Im. So Greg, this is our first opportunity to see a South Korean. We talked about it on the first look. We've talked about it a couple of weeks ago. The way to get out of mandatory military service in South Korea, which is 2 years long, one of the ways is to win a medal. doesn't matter what color, win a medal. And based on the actions of Sung Jae-im and Siwoo Kim to forego the Open Championship and play this event, you know, this is their biggest event. This is their major of all majors. This is their opportunity. You talked about pressure with Hideki Matsuyama. Here we have it again with Sung Jae-im.
Yeah, you look at a career like of Sangmoon Bae, and he had won twice on the PGA Tour and was developing. He had in 2015, he had qualified for qualified for the Tour Championship for the first time, and he was really trending upwards. And then he had to go and serve his military deal, and he hasn't really been the same since. And just from, you just hope they can come back from a golf. I mean, remember, it's military service. It's not like you're just not playing golf for a year and a half, 2 years, whatever. I think it's 18 months. You know, you're risking your life. So it's a big deal. The value is a lot worth, is worth a lot more than any one tournament. The value of this Olympics now, because it gives you a great opportunity. So Sung Jae-im, what do we think of his chances? It's a lot of pressure, although Sung Jae does have another chance, assuming all goes as planned for the Olympics.
Right.
So this is not his last chance like it is for Siwoo Kim. Now, the one thing that really sticks out in my mind about Sung Jae-im is, one, he's been a great ball striker before. He's putting pretty well this year. But you think about the Masters in November, and that was again, a soft Masters, and he played great. So I have a really strong feeling that you're going to see a great tournament from Sung Jae-im. I think he's going to step up. I think he's got all of his eggs in this basket, and I think he's going to, I think he's going to perform. I almost like that he had a little bit extra time off instead of playing every single week the way that he normally does. I like that. I think it's a good thing. He can really get focused and really get to know the golf course and really get prepared. And I think that's what you're going to see out of Sung Jae-im.
I led you to the Sung Jae-im question here, Greg. So without leading you anywhere, is there anyone else in the $9,000 range that moves the needle for you?
Back to the top of it. So Sung Jae is at the bottom, who I love. Back to the top, I also love Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
For many reasons. One, I still think Victor Hovland is maybe the best ball striker in the field. That's probably a little extreme, but he's definitely right there in the mix, right? You combine his off the tee game and his iron play game, and it's great. And he's been overshadowed a little bit and rightly so, by Colin Morikawa and all the success he's had. But for many of the same reasons, he's going to have the benefit of the slower greens as well. He's going to have that going for him. He's 19th for the year strokes gain approach. He's sixth off the tee. But the other thing is his form is been pretty good. I mean, he had the forced withdrawal from the U.S. Open because of the sand in the eye. The PGA was not great in the middle rounds, but you go back to May. I mean, he was on a real good streak, back-to-back top threes at the Wells Fargo and the Valspar, and he just played a great Sunday round at the Open Championship, leading to a tied 12th finish. So I think Victor Hovland's going to come out raring and ready to go and give Colin a run for his money.
Greg mentions the ball striking metric. This is an unofficial stat that we've kind of taken two official stats and put them together. So if you take strokes gained off the tee, you add it with strokes gained approach, you get strokes gained ball striking. And since the start of 2021, only two golfers in this field have been better than Victor Hovland when they have as many rounds as he does. That's Colin Morikawa and it's Corey Connor. So you are absolutely right, Greg. He is top tier in the ball striking category. So see, I'll throw this over to you. We've hit the top of the 9K range. We've hit the bottom of the 9K range. Is there anybody I could sell you in the middle of the 9K range?
I mean, give me Paul Casey. Speaking of
There you go.
Good job. sorry, I interrupted the lead there. Paul, no, I do like Paul Casey a lot. And, you know, he's been okay lately, but he is a good ball striker. And that's kind of what I'm leading on here. And to what Greg was talking about the putter. I mean, I also think these slower greens might help a Paul Casey as well, because his putting hasn't been very good lately. So I like Victor Hovland as well. I like Sung Jae-im as well. I'm going to be playing some Sung Jae-im. And I know I mentioned Joaquim Niemann yesterday, but And I do kind of like him, but I think I like Hovland, Casey, and Sungjae the most in this range.
I'm pretty bullish on Niemann, maybe more from an outright perspective. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that he is better than people want to give him credit for, but this is a really stacked range and you're going to have to draw lines in some places. And I love Hovland. I'm even pretty interested in Abraham Answer, who outside of Torrey Pines in the Open Championship has been unbelievable. I wonder if he can, you know, I worry about the wet conditions and how that might negatively impact him, but there's a lot going on here, Greg. I mean, this 9K range is stocked with anything that you could want. So it's kind of hard to start drawing some hard lines on these guys.
The one thing about Niemann that I really like, that's different than Hovland, different than he's a really good putter. He's having a great putting year. Yes. He's 23rd for the year in strokes gained putting, which I don't think it's the most important thing this week statistically that you're a great putter going in, that's going to mean you're going to have a great putting week. But it definitely is a plus in my book. And the other thing is he makes a lot of birdies. He's 18th in birdie average. So it's nothing that Paul Casey and Sungjae Im and you hear all the time, Sungjae Im leads the tour in total birdies, partly because of play, but he makes a lot of birdies every round as well. But I like Joaquin for those reasons. So I really, Sia, do you think he's going to be a lower owned in this range? Would he be kind of a contrarian play where you could get some value out of it? Because, I mean, he's right there with those guys, in my opinion.
I wouldn't say he'd be lower owned. I think everybody in this range is going to be pretty high owned. I don't know. I wonder if people are going to come around to Shane Lowry. But outside of that, I think all of these guys are going to be similar, just, you know, 3 to 4 percentage points apart. So they'll all be kind of owned, but not. I don't think any of them are going to be over owned.
Okay.
I think there's going to be a lot of Sungjae love. I just think people said, we waited 5 years for this. I'm not going to miss out on the FOMO of like, what if this guy just goes out and wins the whole thing?
Yeah.
Like everybody loves a good narrative. Everybody loves Sungjae, but it is going to be interesting. And we'll learn more as the week goes on. Okay. This is where we start to get into some really interesting situations. The field starts to fall off a cliff. I think the 8Ks are okay. Sevens, we've got to talk about, and sixes, there's value that needs to be parsed through, and we'll get to that. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. The $8,000 range. It's guys you've heard of, guys you know. It's Cam Smith, Corey Connors, Christian Bezuidenhout, Tommy Fleetwood. Goes down to Mark Leishman and Guido and Garrick and Alex Noren and Thomas Peters and Mackenzie Hughes. And to me, Greg, and correct me if I'm wrong, this feels like the last tier of guys that have realistic win equity. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Yes. Well, I definitely don't think there's win equity below. Question is there really win equity in this?
Okay. One? Where would you draw the line?
Is there...
It was such a tough question. He froze up.
That's actually a really good point, though. I think Cameron Smith and Corey Connors could potentially win, but outside of that, I mean, as much as I like Guido Migliozzi and some of these other guys, I mean, Christian Bezuidenhout, can he win in this field? I'm not so sure.
Leishman wins at a rate that I always think is way too high for him, right? He won at Torrey Pines. He won the team event with Cam Smith. Maybe I draw the line at Leishman. I'd like to draw the line above Leishman, but I think maybe I have to draw it below Leishman. is kind of where I'm at. Greg, we got you okay, back.
So I'm sorry, I dropped out. I was spinning a little bit. Anyway, I think I would draw the line at Garrett Higgo. Forgive me if you guys just said that. But just because he's won so much, it's what Kyle talks about a lot. I would say there's a chance, although I don't think it's likely, that he gets a win. He's got three wins since February. So
yeah, two on the European Tour, back-to-back weeks, I believe they were, and then the Palmetto was the one on the PGA Tour.
Nearly back-to-back weeks. You had it in April, but they were both in the Canary Islands, if that's how you say it, Canary. You had the Gran Canaria Open and the Canary Islands Championship, but he did have another event in between there.
Got it.
But anyway, where he came in eighth, so it was a really good streak for him. So yeah, there's a chance that he could get it done. Although the play of late, since winning on the PGA Tour, hasn't really been great. His best finish is 41st at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. So I don't necessarily love that.
Okay, so Sia, let's take a crack at this 8K range. I'm not nearly as excited about it as I was the nines, and at least the sevens offer you a little bit more value. So for me, it's a little bit of a dead zone. Do you find something here?
It's not as much of a dead zone as the 7K range, that's for sure. You know, Cam Smith is one of those guys. I haven't really been playing him quite as much, but, you know, his finishes haven't been that great, but he's the type of guy that I think has actually some win equity. I mean, to answer that question, I think the win equity argument probably goes to Cam Smith. If I really wanted to stretch it, I'd go to Guido Migliozzi, and that's the other guy I really like in this 8K range. I would say I like Cam Smith, don't love him. I like Guido Migliozzi, and I like Mackenzie Hughes. And Migliozzi's just been, I mean, we talk about how Higo's been good. Well, Migliozzi's been really good too. Now, he missed the cut at the Open. Okay, no big deal. But since May, he's been really good, whether it's on American soil or European soil or on the European Tour. He's been really good. So I think that's a guy that actually has, you know, there's very few guys that I think have value in this tournament, but in terms of you look at the price and you're like, oh, that's actually pretty good. I think Guido Migliozzi actually presents some value. As far as Mackenzie Hughes, I just think he pops, and I think he's been playing really well lately. So I think there might be some value there. Obviously a great putter as well.
Yeah, so a couple of good putters there for Sia. Cam Smith, 12th on tour in strokes gained putting. Benkgrass is one of his better surfaces. And then Hughes, I don't think you're going to get much pushback on Mackenzie Hughes from Greg or I. It is a situation where he can get absolutely scorching hot with the putter. He was one of the guys who slept on the 54-hole lead at Torrey Pines. That Sunday looked a lot worse than it really was. Has bounced back. He's played well recently. It's a little bit dependent on the flat stick, but he can definitely move up a leaderboard in a hurry. Greg, when you look at this 8K range and you try to figure out who or if any of these guys are going to be making your lineups, who are you circling here?
Corey Connors, first and foremost, more so than Cam Smith for me. Again, my lean this week is just going to ball striking. And you look at what Corey Connors does, it's hard to find a better guy, especially in this range. He's ninth in strokes gain off the tee for the year. He's ninth strokes gain approach the green. I knew he was going to have a good Open Championship, and I just I didn't pull the trigger. Sunday didn't go great, which kind of saved me a little bit. But 15, he came in 15th, and that was kind of a rebound from some average form. But again, we're going to a place with a little bit slower greens, a little bit easier on the greens for a guy like Corey Connors. I think it could really help him improve. And I also think this is the kind of place where he can hit a lot of greens. And his weakness, which is short game, I don't think is going to come into play quite as much. Perhaps you'll hit it in some bunkers when you miss greens, but they're big greens as it is, and they're soft greens. And I think a guy like Corey Connors, who's 11th on the year in greens regulation, is just going to have like 65 birdie putts over the four. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 65 greens.
Greens. That's a lot. He's gonna hit a ton of greens. I'd be surprised if it was 65 out of 72. Yeah. But it is going to be quite a lot of them. And what I find actually really interesting with Corey Connors, and you can tell that Greg is laying this foundation of the type of player that he wants, right? He wants ball strikers, and if you're a bad putter, hey, maybe that gets a bit neutralized on these greens. You can see Greg laying the blueprint here. What I also think is very interesting about Corey Connors, Sia, is we went through like the spring of Corey Connors. He was the hottest thing in DFS. Everyone was betting him every single week. His ownership was pushing 25%. He did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong, but because he didn't cash a winning ticket or do whatever, his ownership is actually coming back down to earth. If you look at it, at him, two starts ago at US Open, he was 9.5% owned. You look at his most recent start, the Open Championship, 4.2% owned. Have we just grown tired of using Corey Connors?
It's a really good question. I think for the sake of the Olympics, I think the answer is going to be yes. I think the ownership is going to be down. And it's not because of any really good reason, other than the fact that I think at 8,800, he's in a really weird spot for people to want to take him, especially if they go the stars and scrubs approach. Like, I just don't, even if you're building a balance lineup, it's, and I've built a few, it's hard to get Corey Connors in your lineup as much as you might like him, which is why I've, of course, lean towards some of that bottom 8K range with Guido and Mackenzie Hughes. So I agree with the Corey Connors play, and I agree that that short game is going to be minimized, especially around the green, because these greens are massive, and he's probably going to be hitting greens. It's just a matter of whether he's on the right part of the green for his putt. But yeah, I mean, he does seem like a smart play. I get it.
I'm saying at least 65 greens of regulation.
Right, I mean, would you like to place like a George Washington on this? Like,
I mean, the more I hear you guys talk, the more I want to build my lineup around Corey Connors. I want to force him in my lineup. And I mean, I know I'm totally with you, Sia. If you love the top guys and you want to go heavy stars and scrubs, I agree. It's really hard to get him in there. Which was a struggle as I was kind of messing around earlier, but I think there's a way and a path to start with Corey Connors, and see what you can come up with.
I just wrote down Corey Connors, 65 greens in regulation. You know what's going to happen, yeah. Greg, is he's going to hit every single one and there's going to be no stat tracking for it. And they're not going to tell us, and we're going to have no idea how many greens he hit. That's what's really going to happen here.
For the record.
Oh, no, I didn't even think about that.
65 out of 72 is 90%.
Almost. Somebody last week hit 86% at 3M.
It's probably Sergio, who was just running, who could not putt and was hitting everything. I don't know who it was.
Oh, I got to think about it. It was
Gellerman.
No, maybe. I mean, I don't know that 8. They did
six strokes on approach. I don't know what his greens in regulation number was. I'd have to pull it up.
That's pretty good. No, somebody. It'll hit me, but I can't think of it right now.
8.6 is about what Cam Champ gained putting, by the way, which is just bananas.
Yeah, it was so good. It's so good.
Well, now I'm here, so I'm just going to do the greens and regulation.
Just take a look. I got you over there.
Let me see. Oh, I got the wrong leaderboard. I need performance. Okay, I'm coming. Here we go. This is great television. Greens and regulation. Yep. Louis Oosthuizen hit 62 of them. So 62 out of 72. Quite a few.
Yeah, that's a lot. And so again, back to Sia, kudos for you, back to the warm and fuzzies. But I think Corey Connors beats it. I think he hits more than 62.
No way, but I like it, but no way.
Okay. It's aggressive. It's really aggressive.
The $7,000 range, Sia, this is a mixed bag. These are guys that we see and we like to bet on routinely on the PGA Tour. Enter Siwoo Kim, Sebastian Munoz, Johnny Vegas has been popular. And then you start to get to some guys that we might not see as often. Antoine Rosner, Thomas Dietrich, Raikuya Hoshino, and Rasmus Højgaard. I mean, this is where we really start to blend your normal regular PGA Tour players with guys that are 200, 300 ranked in the world.
Yeah, and it makes it, this range is so tough. I think the guys that really pop off the page to most people that'll be making lineups are, we talked about one of them yesterday, Mito Pereira. I think obviously he is on fire right now. I mean, he comes out, he misses the cut, and we talked about this last week, how there's just been a natural progression where he has just started to dominate, and that really bore out last week as well. I think him and Jonathan Vegas are going to be really popular guys because the ball striking for both of them has been really good. They seem to be guys that will be able to score over four rounds. I worry about them both because of that, the same travel issues we talked about with Patrick Reed. I mean, it is grueling. It's not nothing that you just finish a tournament and then you fly 18 hours to Tokyo And then, by the way, they're 13 hours ahead. So not only have you lost 13 hours, but it's, let's say you land at like 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, guess what? It's 11 o'clock a.m. the next day already. So you are completely mixed up from a just adjustment standpoint. I think that's something. Does that mean I'm not going to play Jonathan Vegas and Mita Pereira? Probably not. But I do need to point out that I think they're going to be very highly owned. So for me, I'm just wondering where the pivots are. And there's just not much for me to choose from. I think Sebastian Munoz is interesting. The thing that really plagues Sebastian Munoz is the around the green game, which, again, it should be neutralized to some degree. So I think that's an interesting, quote, pivot. I think maybe Carlos Ortiz deserves some consideration. Outside of that, I really do not like the 7K range.
Mm. Well, if Corey Connors is hitting 90% of the greens, then Munoz will hit 80% of them, and he'll be fine around the greens. I think Greg, Sia has a point here. There's one guy who I will reveal shortly who I'm like, maybe I could pivot here. I'm not super stoked about it, but there's going to be some clear-cut popular plays. It's going to be Siwoo Kim. It's going to be Johnny Vegas. It's going to be Mito Pereira. And there's not a lot of confident pivots off of those guys.
No, I totally agree. Guy that has my interest to some degree is Detri. I think I got that at least close to right.
But I think just it's Detri, but close.
Detri. Yeah. Okay, that's right. But his performance at the Scottish Open was really impressive to me. And I got to watch a little bit of it, which definitely gives me a little bit more interest. So I do like him in that. He also came in second in the Porsche European Open. Now these are solid European Tour events. It's been some solid play mixed in with some missed cuts. But what happened at the Open Championship? He shoots 72, 74. Is it just a little too much pressure? I played great last week. Now I go to the Scottish Open, or now I go to the Open Championship, and I'm ready for a major. Okay, well, maybe I guess I'm not. I guess I'm not ready for that. Am I ready for the Olympics? I don't know. So again, I'm with you guys. I don't feel really confident, but I like that there's been at least some really, really good form leading in. So I am a fan of that. But past that, I mean, I almost think there's a way to avoid the range entirely.
There is. I think the bigger thing there, Greg, is can you play somebody there and just be different? You know what I mean? Because we do have a condensed field. We do have a couple of guys that we're probably all going to be taking that are pretty chalky. So it's just one of those things. Like if you have the right pivot in the 7K range, you are really one upping the field there, because not like the guys we discussed, nobody really likes them outside of Mito and Vegas.
Yeah. What about Carlos Ortiz? What about Carlos Ortiz?
Yeah, I like Ortiz.
I mean, I know he's 79. He's at the very top of the board, but I mean, it may be unfair to say he can't win. He's won on the PGA Tour. He could win an event like this. I mean, I know it's a really, it's full of heavy hitters on the top, but the Houston Open that he won, he beat Dustin Johnson. He was playing the best golf that we've ever, some of the best golf we've seen in the last 10 years. So I don't know. Maybe he's got a chance. The form hasn't been great coming in. So again,
here's your guy. Here's your pivot. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. Antoine Rosner. So he has a very small sample size of strokes gain metrics. Of the sample size that he has, his last three gained 7.5 strokes on approach at the PGA Championship and missed the cut, which is actually hard to do. That was in two rounds. Gained 8.5 strokes on approach at the Memorial, finished 18th, made the cut at the Open Championship. We don't know how he did it there because the strokes gain metrics do not exist. Twice a winner on the European Tour in his last 16 starts. Played well at the match play, did not make it out of his pod. I don't think this stage is necessarily too big for the 89th ranked player in the world. Someone who competes against these guys and in major championships and in WGCs. And when he's going well, strikes it well. I think he's the guy you get at low ownership if you want to take a crack at it.
He shot, he gained how much in the PGA?
Seven and a half strokes in two rounds.
He shot 79 in the first round.
Yeah, he lost 4.6 around the green. He must have like chunked two or like left it. He must have made a big number somewhere, I think.
Yeah, or hit it into a penalty area off the tee or something. That is hard to – it's hard to put that together in your mind, but and it's surprising. Hey, I mean, I like it just as much as anybody else in this range aside from Mito, which I think Sia brings up a really good point about the travel. I think that's a really good point.
Here's the Rosner. Okay, so he shot a 79 in round one. On 13, he made a triple in which he chipped from one side of the green over the green into the water. And then it was bad after that. And then he made another triple. So he made two triples on his back nine, a triple on 13, a triple on 16, which was the par five. First shot into the water left. Hit his third for, I mean, he made a mess of it around the green too. So yeah. two big numbers, which honestly, I'd prefer that than six bogeys in a row.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's stuff that's easy to clean up. And this golf course may not present that. There are double bogey golf courses, disaster golf courses, and there are bogey golf courses. From what I've seen, this seems to be more of a mistakes or bogeys, not doubles and triples, especially when you get softer and slower greens.
The real value tier, the $6,000 range, Sia, and this is where we start to run out of data on these guys. It doesn't necessarily always exist. You've got Challenge Tour players. You've got Japan Tour players. This is where we really have to go and do our homework and find out who these guys are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and try to, you know, it's almost like in college basketball, right? Or bowl games where it's like, common opponents, you know, what events mm-hmm. were they in? And then other people were in, like, try to figure it out that way. So early in the week, what have you found on the $6,000 range?
A few guys I like here. Two of them are at the top and one of them is at literally the very bottom. Ryan Fox is one of them, yes. Representing New Zealand. So Ryan Fox, he's pretty long off the tee. He can
be
a little
very long off the tee.
He can be right. There you go. So he can be wayward. You know, he made the cut at the Open. He was 44th at the Scottish Open, three top 15 finishes in a row in Europe last month. If you go back to the Saudi International, he was sixth, and that was in February. I feel like if you're in the 6K range, you got a guy that's finishing top 15 recently on the European Tour and who's making cuts, you know, at the Open. It just makes sense to me. I mean, he sounds like the type of guy that probably should be in like that 7,500 range, but he's not. So I like Ryan Fox. Henrik Norlander has just found his game. I mean, mm-hmm. Henrik Norlander was pretty terrible for, I don't know, 8-9 months. Now he's made five cuts in a row. And again, with a guy that's not going to have to worry about leaving early because of a missed cut, I think Norlander can really help your team out from a DK scoring point standpoint.
T5 at the Barbasol in his last start. I imagine Norlander will be the popular one in this tier because he's the name that people will recognize, five cuts in a row. So yeah, did I hear you say you have a guy at the very, very bottom?
I believe he's 6,000.
Oh, boy. What?
Do you guys want to guess?
I mean,
there's only one guess.
It's either the guy who has missed a bunch of, I mean, it has to be Rafael Campos. Right?
It's gotta be.
It's Rafael Campos.
Okay.
So, I mean, that this looks pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop here.
Well, so I'm trying to see how far your chart goes back because Campos was, let's see, second at Corrales.
Third
at the Puerto Rico Open. 20th at the Barbasol, by the way, which is so recent for him. Checks the box there. If you go back to the Valero, he was 34th. Now, he's missed cuts everywhere else. But remember when I said, like, there are certain guys, when they miss cuts, they can go really low and then they have one bad round. Well, let me just give you a couple examples. At the John Deere, he shot a 74 and a 67. At the Wells Fargo, he shot a 69 and a 79. So it can go really bad for him. But keep in mind, perspective-wise, he's 6,000. So he can make almost, I shouldn't say any lineup work, but he can make almost any lineup work. And he's shown you that he can finish top five in tournaments. And he's shown you that even if he doesn't play well one day, he can shoot low the next day. So to me, it's the exact kind of guy in a no-cut event you might want to lean on to gather guys at the top.
So my cheat sheet cuts just short of the runner-up at the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, the T3 at Puerto Rico, and then the week before that was a Korn Ferry Tour event in which he finished T7. So that is the stretch of results that Sia was referencing there. Okay, Greg, your turn, $6,000 range. What do you see, sir?
Well, it sounds like I'm going to definitely play a lineup with Campos. Okay. Because you're right, it's a $6,000 piece, and there's at least something. Although I'm not crazy about it, but
you shouldn't be.
I'm gonna try. I mean, it coming from you, Sia, I trust it. I'm gonna give it a try. But my guy is a little bit different in this range. And I like Norlander too. I totally see where you're coming from with that. I totally see where you're coming from with Ryan Fox. But I think Anirban Lahiri is another excuse that pronunciation, but I think he's another viable option. The Barbasol Championship, he came in tied third, a nice 65 on Sunday, which I really like. And he's popped on a couple of occasions throughout the year. The Valero Texas Open, he also popped and came in fifth place. And at the first rendition of the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship,
thank you,
he came in tied sixth. Tied 11th at the Bermuda Championship. He's played some really nice golf. And the other surprising thing about him is he's 30th on the PGA Tour in birdie average. So I think I find that to be quite interesting. He's not going to hit, he is not going to hit 65 greens. He's not going to hit 62 greens this week. But I think he could be a guy down here in the 6K that's a nice option. And I bet you he's less owned than Norlander.
Oh, by a mile. Also, right. If you make 9 birdies and 9 bogeys a day and shoot even par and finish T37, might be worse than that, T47, you will make a lot of fantasy points. So those birdie makers are incredibly valuable in a no-cut event. Here's my guy, and I'm going to mispronounce this, so my apologies in advance. Adri Arnas, I believe, is how he pronounces it. This is the Spanish.
Sounds right to me.
There we go. The Spanish representative. Here we go. How about this? He has a bunch of top 15s on the European Tour. He is coming off 2 consecutive cuts made, the Irish Open and the Scottish Open. You know, those get some better fields. But you look back at the beginning of the year, he had 3 straight top 15s at some of the premier events on the European Tour schedule. So he finished T10 at the DP World Tour. That was won by Matt Fitzpatrick. He finished T12 in Abu Dhabi, which that one was won by either Paul Casey or I think that one was Hatton. I think that was Terrell Hatton. And then he finished T9 at the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. That was the Paul Casey victory. So you're talking about a guy plays well, first page of the leaderboard in some of the deeper events on the European Tour. I'm grasping for straws at 6,600. I do not think this stage is too big for him. I'm going with Arnas in this range.
Don't hate it.
It sounds like
I don't hate it. There's some options, right? There's some options in the 6K range. Maybe these are just good sales pitches, but yeah. I mean, there is a little bit of, at first glance, if you're just scrolling, you're saying, whoa, this is, but you look a little deeper and I think opportunity may be knocking.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be fun. I cannot wait for this. We're going to have someone don medals. Also, here's what they do. I don't think this is going to impact anybody in fantasy, but did you know, and I'm pretty sure about this, or at least they did this in 2016, no matter how many guys tie for a spot, as long as it's not first, there's no, actually, I don't even know if they do a playoff, but they, if like 5 guys tie for third, all 5 of them get medals. All 5 get medals. They don't break the tie anyway.
Wow. There's no tiebreaker?
Maybe for first. But there is, at least in 2016, there was no tiebreaker. So if there were 5, they got lucky that it was 3 guys stood alone, solo 1, solo 2, solo 3. But I'm almost positive they do not break silver and bronze ties.
They may not. But I thought I read, and again, who knows? But I thought I read that they were, if there was a tie, they would go to a 3-hole playoff. Or a 3-hole aggregate, but that might just be for first.
Yeah,
I think it's just right. For gold.
Yeah.
So Sung Jae and Siwoo will be in like a 6-way tie for third.
T3 baby, T3.
T three would be like best result. Let's go. Just T3,
can you imagine if there was a playoff for third and Sung Jae and Siwoo were tied third? That would be like the most heartbreaking.
Play down your club if you're going against that guy.
I hate to be that guy.
No, Jacob, come on. We're having fun. Tell us what the facts are.
According to this Google search in 2016, there were, you know, if there were a tie for third or second, they would have gone to a playoff.
Well, that's why I am not in the IOC golf committee.
Yeah. Spoiling the news. Really? I really think there is. I'm pretty sure I read that there's a three-hole playoff to determine medals.
Playoffs?
Okay. How about this? Let's say someone's in solo third. Final group, solo third. One shot ahead of a pack of guys that include Siwoo and Sungjae. And one shot clear. What if he intentionally misses a 2-foot putt to drop back into a tie for third for all of those guys? Would they name like an award after it? Like be like the sportsmanship award of all time.
That's the thing. Like if you have the accolades, if you're like a Justin Thomas and you already know you're not getting the gold, like I understand it's all psychological, but like if I'm getting in the mind of Justin Thomas, I'm like, I don't know that this bronze is that big of a deal to me. I could be kind of a hero to some people if I just hit this putt wrong.
And in at least my made up scenario, you would just drop to the tie for third and you'd still get your bronze. You would just bring everybody else in with you.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, that'd be a really nice idea. But I don't think you're going to have 25 guys on the podium.
I don't know. Make up the rules all the time around here. Why not?
if there is, I don't think anybody can do that. I think you have to protect the field. I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But you got to.
I'm saying is everybody's different. Like, I agree with you, Greg. Universally, I think most people would be like, yeah, well, let's see. Exactly. Everybody's different. I think if you get in some of the minds of some of these guys who might not care as much as other guys because of all the accomplishments they already have, I could see somebody kind of pulling a fast one and just pretending they didn't pull a fast one in the first place, just because.
Yeah,
that's what
I definitely don't think anybody will admit it.
Correct.
I missed that on purpose.
Oh, so, I just whiffed that one. My bad. All right, gentlemen. So here's what we've got this week. Tuesday mega preview pod. Then we are going. How about this for commitment to international golf? We are going Sunday recap when it ends, which is going to be about. I don't know if we're going live. I don't know why. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. But we're going to record that like 3 a.m. Sunday morning Eastern time. Commitment to the game of golf. So that's what the content schedule.
Do it live. Do it live.
I'll do it live.
I won't be there. So it's easy for me to say.
So we are going to rock and roll that. So that's what the content looks like for the rest of the week. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes. Thank you, Producer Jacob. That right there. That's Sia Najat, who you can find on Twitter at Sia Najat, and Greg Ducharme, who you can find at The Real GFD. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.